Okay, we are in a Gerus HaKodesh Simon Lamed. We're on page Kuf Nun Aleph in the top numbers. This is a tzedakah letter. This tzedakah letter is actually quite short, and it's also pretty easy because the ideas which are conveyed in this tzedakah letter have all been conveyed before.
There it is.
Okay, so with no further introduction, my da'is zeis. Again, we don't have the prominence of this provenance of this letter. It appears to be a general letter sent out to the community, and this one should go pretty quick, as we've discussed most of the concepts in this letter before. So it says, my da'is zeis. Masha Amrizal. It's not that which is our sages say. Kol haragil levoy lebesa knesses. Anybody who normally comes to shul. V'yayim echad loyva. And one time he didn't come. HaKadosh Baruch Hu shal alav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked, where is this dude? Shneamar mi b'chem yira Hashem. As it says, who among you has fear of Hashem? Now, I believe the Gemara that he's quoting over here says they ask of him, meaning the participants ask of him, is what the Gemara states. But here the Alter Rebbe is indicating that there is something called, the expression is hargel nasiteva, that if a person does something habitually, meaning they do it over and over and over again, so it becomes, therefore, their nature. So here it is, this person has a nature of coming to shul in the morning, which is a pretty good deal as far as what people have to do, because your Avodas Hashem can't really start if you didn't get out of bed. So if you're still sleeping, it's not happening. Okay. Yes. There's only so much you can do while sleeping, while horizontal.
You think you're conscious, you think you're dreaming.
Yes. Okay. So this is where he says, now it doesn't, what this means over here, excuse me, it says Yom Echad. It's one day the guy didn't show up.
One day.
Maybe he has a headache, he has a cold, he got to sleep last night. Too late. Whatever the deal is, it says one day. He's already being asked upon. It says there were people who took this to heart. There was a chosid of the Friedrich Rebbe, who was a Rosh Yeshiva, one of the Mashpiyim in Brenois. His name was Nissen, they called him Reb Nissen. His name was Nissen Naminov. The Friedrich Rebbe said that he was a true Bainani of Tanya. Yeah, that's a pretty good deal.
It's a high level.
He was left to be like the leader of the Russian community when the Friedrich Rebbe left.
Wow.
And he had a big debate in 1946. Should he leave? Should he not leave? You know, his responsibilities, not his responsibilities. And the last minute he decided he's leaving. He's gone. Okay, and the Friedrich Rebbe never said anything. Hey, listen, you know, Mendrick, why'd you leave? You know, I told her I put you in charge of Russia. But so that never, he did whatever he did. So living through the war in Russia and facing like starvation, so he developed all kinds of gastrointestinal problems, which like Yom Kippur was very serious for him, if he did, you know, about eating, not eating, these type of things.
Right.
It says that even when he was in the hospital, what was his avodah? What was his daily avodah? The first thing he would do is he would come to the morning seder and take attendance. Who showed up for Chassidus? Then he would stick around like for davening, and he would do whatever he was due during davening. Then after davening, he kind of like saw the breakfast was out, which was what it was doing. So in the meantime, it said that he would learn an entire mimer by heart, and then he would say 150 chapters of Tillim by heart, and then he would say 53 chapters of Tanya by heart, And then by noon, he would start davening, and he would start and he would finish davening about 3 o'clock. And he did this every day. This is what he did. Okay? It says, even when he was in the hospital, suffering serious stomach ailments, he learned to mimer by heart. He learned, he said the Tillim by heart. He said Gan Prakim Tanya by heart. He davened for 3 hours. You know, the guy's in the hospital. He's in pain.
Yeah.
Okay? No, you have to do what you got to do. Okay? Yosef Weinberg, who was Olav Shalom, who was the one who wrote the Lessons in Tanya.
Yeah, yeah.
So in his later years, I was talking about when he was 92, 93. I think he had broken his hip or something. He was in a nursing home. And he's given the people over there tzuris because he's not coming up. He's not showing up for his physical therapy. So his kids ask him, what's up with the physical therapy? He says, what do they want from me? I have to learn. I have to daven. You know, this is kind of, what do they want me to do? They want me to get up, to push, to pull, you know, just leave me alone. Let me daven.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
So this, the deal is that, without making a person feel guilty, because the Alter Rebbe didn't want that to happen. Even though there are many Hasidim that did, there's a book out now. It's an interesting read. The book is called Samarkand. It's published by Chabad, by Kohos. It's written by a guy by the name of Hillel Zaltzman. They call him Hilke. Okay, he talks about what was it like being a kid growing up during the war era in Samarkand, where his parents had escaped as refugees. And then finally getting out and coming to America. Okay, so it says he had a teacher. And he said he loved his teacher. His teacher instilled with him such wonderful things. He told two stories about this teacher that he loved so much. The boys were playing soccer one afternoon. Okay, the teacher went off, whatever he did, they have a little bit of a break. And so the kids are kicking a ball around. Okay, so they see the teacher, and the teacher gives them like a mean look when they're playing soccer. And afterwards, it's time soccer, you know, the recess is over. So he tells the kids, I'm going to tell you a story. Since I was just coming back from where I was coming from, and there I saw, he mentions the names of three of the older Hasidim. Okay, and says, what were they doing? They were playing soccer. This one kicked the ball to this one, and this one it went, and he hit it with his head, and the kids were starting to laugh. And he says, no, why are you laughing? This is serious. He says, I saw these old Hasidim playing soccer. And then one of the kids said, come on, these guys don't play soccer. So his response, the teacher's response was, if they're not playing soccer, you shouldn't be playing soccer either. If it's unfitting for them to be playing soccer, you shouldn't be playing soccer. Okay, this is the story that he remembers. Me, I saw the fallacy right away, is because those three older Hasidim weren't 10 years old.
Right.
You know, they couldn't play soccer. If they had to play soccer, they're going to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm reminded of two stories. This is going to be story hour over here before we manage to get through the thing. There was when 770 first opened up, before they opened up Bedford and Dean, which was before Ocean Parkway, so the little kids also learned in 770.
Ooh.
Okay, they had their own rooms. Evidently, 770 wasn't very big as far as how many kids were there. Maybe it was a dozen kids, however it was. So there was a kid, he's not from a Lubavitch family, and he wasn't very happy. I forget who it was who noticed that he wasn't very happy. Even was the Rebbe or the Rebbe who was not yet Rebbe, or maybe it was the Rebbe in the Hamadina. Somebody noticed that this kid wasn't happy.
Yeah.
And the kid says he wants to go to another school. He says, why do you want to go to another school? He says, because during recess over here, you don't play ball. He likes to play ball. So it's looked down upon. It says, they look down upon me because I want to play ball. It says, the next day the kids are playing in the courtyard, which was now would be between, it was grass then. It was between 7-7 and the library. They're playing over there, whatever they're playing. And it says the door opened up on the balcony on the second floor, and the Rebbetzin, the Hamadina, threw a ball down to them.
Hang on. Go ahead.
Okay. And then, a similar story that happened is Rabbi Mentlich and Rabbi Tenenbaum got called one day to the Friedrich Rebbe.
Hi. Let me call you back. I'm learning with Rabbi Finland. I'll call you back in a minute, okay? Okay, all right.
Okay, you hear Rabbi Tenenbaum and Rabbi Mentlich. These are guys who were sitting behind the Rebbe. The whole time you ever saw a picture of the Rebbe, Rabbi Mentlich was the one who poured the Rebbe's wine. And Rabbi Tenenbaum stood off to the side behind the Rebbe. So they were in charge of the yeshiva. So they get a notice, Rabbi Rothstein, I think it was, called the Friedrich Rebbe wants to see them immediately.
Whoa.
So the Friedrich Rebbe, they come into the Friedrich Rebbe, and the Friedrich Rebbe asks them, how come they're not playing ball with the students? I heard this story from Nachum Kaplan, who was one of the students at the time. He says, that day, Rabbi Mentlich and Rabbi Tenenbaum were in the kapatas with their gartels, and they were playing punch ball together with the kids. It happened one time. Okay, so as far as the attitude that of coming to shul, not coming to shul, so the Alter Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, when it comes to klippa and these things, doesn't pull any punches. Either it's kedusha or it's not.
Right.
But the Alter Rebbe is the one who teaches about the idea of utilization. Generally, this whole term about utilization, taking the physical world and using it for stuff, is discouraged among Bachrim.
Okay.
Because Bachrim should live a life of asceticism, because when they are leaving the yeshiva, they're going to go down. From whatever level they have accomplished they are, a Bachrim normally goes down. It says that the word chosin, meaning groom, is also can be true, and ter comes from the word chus darga, that he went down a level. Okay? Because he has to, the first 3 months I was married, I put on 30 pounds. So that wasn't, I wasn't even thinking about it.
Leaving the desert and going there.
Yeah, exactly. So when you're going down a level, so they say the Bachrim should lead a life where they don't need to have it. Because so what happens is when they get older and they're moving, they're in the world, so they're going to have what they're going to have, but now they should use it in a way that it's utilized to serve Hashem. If they're going to tell Bachrim that they should use Gashmias to serve Hashem, so they're going to come out of yeshiva, what's going to happen? They're all going to become big fat slops. So Bachrim are taught, no, you don't need.
I see.
Mm-hmm. So, but the Alter Rebbe was the one who introduced this concept of utilization.
Yes.
But still, all in all, what's expected of us? What did the Rebbe's expect of the Hasidim? Just everything. That's all. What did the Rebbe want? Just everything.
There's no such thing as Judaism light?
No. there was, I believe it was in, I think it was in Tavshin Mem Beis. The Rebbe, don't quote me on it though. The Rebbe, because right now I might be misremembering if I was there, maybe I heard it on a hookup in Seattle. Okay, my brain is telling me I was there when the Rebbe said it, but I don't think I really was. I think it was in Mem Beis, I was in Seattle. The Rebbe wanted to reinstitute that before the Friedrich Rebbe instituted daily chitas, so that you finish Tanya in the course of a year. So the custom in Lubavitch was that a person would learn a chapter of Tanya before davening.
Whoa.
And the Rebbe wanted people, not a different, it could be the same chapter also. Many Hasidim learn chapter 47 of Tanya every single day. It's a whole chapter, it talks about Shema, and it's 3/4 of a page long. Bravo, we did it, okay? It's the shortest chapter in Tanya. Okay, so the Rebbe said that he'd like to reinstitute that people should be learning a chapter of Tanya before davening. So one Chacham wrote in, before davening, does that mean before Ezehu? Or does that mean before Hodu? So the Rebbe answered, since you're asking already, both. So, Yol, what do you what did you expect the answer was going to be? So now, that's coming to shul. Coming to shul, a person didn't come to shul once. So Hashem says, no, where's the guy?
Yeah.
You know, it always impresses me that you'll have a group and not so many people show up, especially like by davening. Okay? And someone will say, where is everybody? Okay? So my immediate thought is, you're asking me, I'm here. You have to ask the people who aren't here where they are.
Right.
So the way it is with davening, and he says it's the same thing with every mitzvah. If a person normally does, every single time that he has to do it, he does the mitzvah, whether it be a daily mitzvah or a life cycle mitzvah or whatever it is, normally he does this mitzvah. And one time he doesn't do the mitzvah, Hashem wants to know, how come he didn't do the mitzvah? And he says, "Ubeprat mitzvahs hatzedakah shekula keneged kol mitzvahs." And for sure, it must have been that the year before, the Rebbe didn't get exactly how much he was expecting to get. You know, as we've had these type of letters before.
Yeah.
You know, in chapter 20, I guess they go to chapter 21, same type of a deal. So he says he wants to know, so he says people aren't giving. So if people aren't giving, Hashem's going to want to know why.
Right.
You know, I sent out my shluchim every year to raise funds for Eretz Yisrael and the other community projects that he was raising money for. And I'm getting, they kept an accurate account of who gave what when. And the Rebbe would go over these lists very meticulously. Okay? And then he would say, oh, but where's this person? Where's that person? And he says, Nagam Shehu Bli Neder. Chasa Shalom. Even though the idea of the people pledged. And when a person pledges tzedakah, what he's really saying is I'm going to give so much money. But what he really means is I'm going to give so much money, bli neder, without making a vow. Because, like this, if something happens, some mitigating circumstances, so he's got an out that really he's not taking a vow. Don't hold his feet to the fire. But he says, that's true. So the person can say, I have an out, I did a certain pledge, I can't come through with my pledge, I just hate that. A guy pledges, I'm going to give such and such, and later says, I'm sorry, I can't give.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? Scream at the guy. He doesn't have to give. Afal pikein, kol hachayil, asher nega yiras Hashem b'libah, any man of valor who's got an iota, a monochrome, of fear of Hashem in his heart. Lo yasal anavshem alakis laseis megaroyas bekaidish. It should always be, it should make it such that he should never go down in holiness. His godly soul, the expression you're talking in, mylin bekedusha v'loy, mylin bekedusha v'loy maridin. You're supposed to go up in holiness and not go down.
So
at the very least, if you gave a ruble last year, you should give a ruble this year.
Right.
You shouldn't give a half a ruble this year. You're not making as much as last time. So what? The commitments that a person makes to doing tzedakah, because, let's say, so a person didn't make as much money this year. Does that mean he puts on tefillin less? He's still putting tefillin on the same amount.
Right.
Is he going to eat less matzah by the Seder? He's still going to eat the same amount of matzah. He's still going to hear the shofar blowing.
Right.
Or Rosh Hashanah the same amount. So he should still keep up his giving of tzedakah. He wants to say, but wait a minute, that sounds fallacious, because there's a big difference. The shofar I bought when I had money. And now it works even when I don't have money.
Right.
The money for giving tzedakah when I gave a certain amount was when I had money. Now I don't have that money to give to tzedakah. It says, but that thinking itself is fallacious, because Hashem pays for all the mitzvahs that we do. So therefore, a person has the money that they're supposed to give to tzedakah given to them by Hashem. It may look like they look at their bank account that they don't have it, but they really, they do. They're looking, they're saying, oh, I make less money and I have a budget. It says sometimes our budgets get in the way. Because really the person, Hashem really gave it to them. Okay, the costs are going to come someplace, but it says Hashem never remains a Baal Chayv. And if it is that a person gave too much tzedakah for what they're really supposed to give, so it says Hashem will pay him back. Don't worry. Okay? The only deal is a person can't be faint-hearted about it. I just read a very cute story. It says there's a guy comes from England. He's not exactly a Lubavitcher. Okay? He's got a business. He's a decent, successful businessman. So he comes into Yechidus, and the Rebbe says, how would you like to be a partner? So the guy says, jumps at the opportunity. A partner with the Lubavitcher Rebbe? He says they talk about the whole thing, they draw the whole thing, and and he says, but a partner doesn't act unilaterally. You always have to ask me before you make any decision. Okay? So he goes back. The guy was a furrier. He dealt in furs, wholesale furs. So he gets a call. The Rebbe tells him he should buy a certain amount, a certain fur, a certain type of fur. Okay, a certain species of fur. Okay? So he buys and he reports back to the Rebbe. So the Rebbe said, I didn't realize I had such a small-minded partner. I want you to buy more of that fur. So he tells him, so he went, he writes back, okay, he bought more of that fur. So he says, the Rebbe writes back, it's still not enough. I want you to buy all of that fur that you possibly can. Okay, so the guy is now, he's like taking out loans to go buy this fur. So he told him, all the fur that's possibly available worldwide, I own. Okay? So what happens as soon as he buys it? He owns all the fur. The price drops. That's called market supply economics. Nobody wants the stuff. He's got it all. The price drops. So right. He's thinking he's got to cover his bases. At least let me sell so I can pay back the loans. The Rebbe said, absolutely not. Do not sell. Okay, the price is continually going down. 6 months, the price is going down on the commodities market every single day for 6 months. And the guy's writing weekly, should I sell, should I sell? And the rabbi is always writing back, no, you shouldn't sell. Finally, some European designer of Milan or something like this, he's got a whole line of clothing that he wants, and he wants it specifically in this specific type of fur that this guy's sitting on.
Right.
Okay, so now, this is a big fashion design house. The guy wants this stuff. The price goes through the roof. Because he's willing to pay at this point. He doesn't care how much the stuff costs. He'll just pass that on to his customers. On the contrary, they'll say it's got this type of fur, and you have to pay so much money for this specific type of fur, because it's a very expensive fur, we have to charge you more. Okay? The guy made millions on the one sale. He paid back his loans, he paid back the interest, he's still walking around with millions. He gets on a plane, he comes to New York, he gets a yechid, this is I think back in the 60s, and he writes a check to the Rebbe, he says, this is your half. So the Rebbe says, I'm dissolving the partnership. So he says, why? He says, I can't have a partnership with somebody who's weak-hearted and small-headed. So,
yeah.
You have to have a certain breitkeit. So the Rebbe would very often ask for people, for at times, I have a project, I want people to give tzedakah. And there was one for Brangen when the Rebbe said, and I'm going to look to see, everybody write down how much they're giving, okay? And for certain people, so he called out the name, I think it was like 1955, he called out the name, and he said, you're a yeshiva bachur, this is too much. Give a hundredth of what you promised. Okay? So there's one guy, he opened up a thing, and he said, No. He said, he called it out and said, you have to get 400 times this amount. Okay? So it says it was basically the guy who was a diamond dealer, and he has all the money that he brought with him to buy diamonds. So he gave the whole money away. He's got no money to buy diamonds. That's it. And he doesn't know what he's going to do for a profit. The Rebbe at that Fabringen said, however much you're going to give, Hashem's going to pay you back four times. Okay? And he said, don't think Klein Kapeldick. So the people who he's, and he said, how much is your, this guy, he gave away everything because the Rebbe said so. He didn't have any money to buy diamonds. He got himself a deal. He stopped over. The Rebbe said he should stop over here. He wasn't planning on it. He said, stop over anyway. He made some kind of a business arrangement, and he made back his four times. And they all lived happily ever after. Yeah. So.
Yes. Yeah.
So Hashem doesn't. So Hashem does not remain in debt to a person. So a person, he says, a person who's got a modicum of fear of Hashem in his heart, he shouldn't have anything to worry about when it comes to giving tzedakah. That he's going to go down less from what he gives normally every year. The money he's giving is being used to enliven the spirit of the downcast and the humble. The leslay megar mehon, that they have no way of supporting themselves. Eretz Yisrael in the 1790s had no national product. They had no gross national product. There's no money over there. People, in order to support themselves, were totally and completely dependent upon foreign aid. And so he said, listen, you're going to go down. You think you don't have enough. What about them? They have nothing. Do you have more than nothing? Good, you have to give. That this is the sukkah of the King David that fell. Now normally, when we talk about sukkahs, doves, and nefelis, when we say harachaman hu yakim lanu as sukkahs, doves, and nefelis, by benching during sukkahs, that's talking about the base of Mikdash. The tent of David that fell is referring to the base of Mikdash. Here, he's talking about the entire gullus. The fact that there is no economy in Israel is an expression of Sukkos David HaNefelos. The temple, the tent of David that fell. Israel is not supposed to have no economy. Israel is supposed to be a prosperous country. Israel is supposed to be able to take care of itself, and people shouldn't have to come and collect. The fact that people from Israel come outside of Israel, he mentioned this before, is an indication, an expression of the Golus. And he said in a previous letter, the fact that Talmidei Chachamim have to go ask the people who are considered the ignorant masses to support them is also an expression of the Golus. So he says, this, the whole business that you have to give tzedakah to a poor person so that he should be able to survive, is only because we're in Galus. Mashiach's going to come. Nobody's going to need to know a handout. L'kaimam l'raimam, to support them and to elevate them. L'mehavi echad be'echad. And then we become one with one. Are we united in one thing? Okay, because what happens over here? Somebody needs a blood transfusion. So somebody gives them a blood transfusion. So what is it that's enlivening this person who needed the blood transfusion is the life of the person who gave the blood transfusion. That person, that donor's life is now the life of the recipient. So now also, if you're talking about tzedakah, so now this person, we know about tzedakah, that a person has, it's called a mitzvah klalis, because a person had to work for it. And he's putting his whole essence into getting that money. and he has to give 10 or 20%. And in order to give 10 or 20%, he has to have another 80 or 90% that he made, that he put his effort into. So he's giving up like a pint of blood. You know, there's only so much blood you could give. They don't let you give too much because you'll die. So it's the same thing. You can only give 10 or 20% because we don't want you dying because you gave too much tzedakah. And what could have enlivened you, you give now to another person to enliven them. So what situation do you have now is your life is enlivening them. So you become one thing. It all depends on how much you do. And how much you give. As it says, and he talked about this also in, chapter 22, 23. I don't remember these things anymore, sorry. Kol pruta, pruta misteris l'cheshbin gadol. This was in chapter 5, where he brought the example of Simen Chai 5 from the Geras HaKadosh. Brought the example of a coat of mail. That in the Roman times, the coat of mail was a lot of little scales. So each scale, did metal scale, did nothing. But if you put them all together with a whole bunch, so now it'll protect the person from arrows. So it's the same thing also with all the tzedakah that a person gives. And he made a suggestion that a person shouldn't give tzedakah all at once, because if you give tzedakah all at once, what happens is you got to go scramble. He said, don't wait for my guy to come twice a year. Put money in a box every single day. Earmark it for tzedakah. That way you're giving tzedakah every single day. You're doing the mitzvah of tzedakah every day. And just as it is that box will accumulate a great amount of money, quantitatively, so too also qualitatively there will be a tremendous impact because the person did that mitzvah of tzedakah 365 times instead of once or twice. Alder ma'ayma resolve. Similarly, our sages say, a masa gadol havai kishuhu bi'ir elokeinu. When is Hashem great? Is when he's in the city of Elokeinu. What does that mean? V'hu b'chinas makom acheshbon. That you're talking about time and place. Okay, when it says specifically, it says bi'ir elokeinu. Elokeinu means refers to the levels of nature. Nature being limited to time and space.
When is
it physical? When is it that Hashem is great, or that you see Hashem's greatness, is when we are able to reveal godliness and therefore goodness into three dimensions in past, present, and future. When we can bring the godliness down into our plane of existence, then we see the greatness of Hashem. It says elsewhere, quoted in chapter 4, way back at the beginning of Tanya, in the place where you find Hashem's greatness, there you find Hashem's humility. Meaning to say that if I can say, wow, Hashem is really great, that must be a very low level of Hashem that I appreciate. But still, because we all have pea brains, but we can only think in three-dimensional terms, as Hashem is way beyond three dimensions. Still, nonetheless, by us doing these mitzvahs in a constant, consistent way, we affect our plane of existence, we draw godliness down, and then we can see when is Hashem great. Hashem is great is when he can relate to us.
Yes.
So you have the example of a teacher. Who are the most cleverest, the smartest teachers? Those who teach first grade. Okay? Because in order for this person's a big chacham, and this person's going to try and relate to the intellect of a 5 or 6 year old. So in order to be able to do that, that person really has to have an ability of bringing his intellect down so that this 5 year old can understand and appreciate what it is that this big chacham is trying to do. Okay, so that takes a tremendous effort, and that you can see the greatness of the Chacham. It says, by looking, for example, Rashi introduces his commentary, he says, I'm only writing for a 5-year-old. Okay, so a lot of people took that seriously. So in many neighborhoods, when do they learn Chumash with Rashi? When they're in grade school. the Rebbe showed from 1967 till 1992 that the Halavai should be on the level of Rashi's 5-year-old.
Yeah.
Rashi says, I'm writing for a 5-year-old. But the insights that the Rebbe brought out from those Rashis shows how great Rashi was with his intellect, that he was able to bring all that down. And what was he bringing down? His whole entire intellect is being brought down and couched in verbiage that a 5-year-old would appreciate. And the Rebbe just pulled it apart and said, oh, by the way, this is really what Rashi is saying if you analyze what he's trying to convey.
As it says,
that your eyes are wells in cheshbon. Cheshbon meaning accounts. V'amakavin kenayda. What's intended here is known. Ki b'yisarusa d'latata, that when we put forth an effort, hamshachas chayim chayim v'chesed b'maisa hatzdaka, that we are able to express, we are expressing from our own selves, life and grace and kindness with every act of kindness that we do. Beratzen type, willingly, ubasever panim yafis, and with a smile. He says, we know the Rambam lists 8 different levels of charity. Okay, so it's better to give with a smile than just to give. That's a different. It's considered a different level of tzedakah.
Right.
Okay, you don't look at this person as being a bother. You look at this person as an opportunity to be able to fill the mitzvah, and you make the person feel good that they are giving you this opportunity to give tzedakah. It's a higher level of tzedakah rather than just writing the check and say, here, thank you very much. So what happens then? Isarusa de la Ela. So this impetus that we exert causes Hashem to become involved. Yaravai Panav, Hashem shines upon us his countenance, which the word Panav means pnimius, comes from the word internal, face. The word panim is an means your face, because we can tell usually what's going on by looking at your face. We can see all the different expressions that you use. So to also Yar Hashem Panav, Hashem will turn his face, meaning that with every act of tzedakah, Hashem will express an inner expression of his desire. V'hu ha'arzo hamshachas chen v'chesed v'rasana elyen m'chaya chayim ein tzav baruch hu. This is a derivative which is drawn down from Hashem's favor and Hashem's kindness, his supernal desire, the life of life, the infiniteness, the infinite one, blessed be he. And all you do is got to do is give somebody money, and all this happens. All that happens, and all you got to do is give people money. And for all those people who are listening at RabbiFinman.com, all you got to do is click on the left side over there on the donations page right now, and you'll make Hashem happy. Asher l'gdulase ein cheker, that Hashem's greatness you're never going to get. You cannot sit and think. He talked about this way back in chapter 5. You can't sit and think about how great Hashem is. It's beyond leismach shavat tefis beklal. No thought can grasp Hashem at all. But when a person is doing, as he says in chapter 37, when a person, I told you, this is all over the place, we had this already. Every line on this letter, we had someplace else in Tanya already. When a person is going to do a mitzvah, so they will grasp upon the will of Hashem. And it says, if a person grasps on a little bit of infinity, they have grasped the entire infinity. So when a person is just saying, but I'm just giving a little bit of tzedakah, so that person is fulfilling the will of Hashem, and is what's being expressed down here is the Ratzana Elin, the supernal will of Hashem, as it is with Hashem. And since it is, that's indivisible, because that is infinite. So the person is, by giving this small donation, is grabbing on and revealing in this world the totality of Hashem's will, Hashem's infiniteness.
We have no comprehension about this all. And the reason why this happens in this way is because Hashem's kingdom is the kingdom of all worlds. Every world, the only world that was created for itself is this one. All the other worlds and realms of consciousness and levels were all created in such a way to facilitate getting to this one.
Right. Yes.
Okay. It's interesting that it says in the Zohar that if Hashem would have stopped it at Tzilus, it would have been an embarrassment. That's all you. Come on, God. That's all you could do. It's just make some, you know, something that's totally and completely united and infinite. That's all. That's the best you got. Okay. So Hashem's expression. So now this all comes down through every level of Malchus. The purpose of Malchus, of every single letter is level, is to relate to a lower level than it. And so now this person is drawing down godliness through the Seder Yisthalshelus and illuminating every single level of the creation. Almadis Galya Hamachaya Kol HaBroim. It's coming down through the revealed world, enlivening all creatures, Shibachol Echolus, El Yonah V'Tachtenim, throughout the spectrum of creation, from the highest levels to the lowest levels, Shehein V'Chinus Misper V'Cheshban. That every created, there are only a certain specific amount of created entities. Hashem promised Avraham that I'm going to make your children as numerous as the stars. And we're going, wow! But there's only about 4 trillion stars. That's it. Because all we get is 4 trillion Jews. You know, so it all falls within a number. And it's only just a number. So, but that is an expression of Hashem's Malchus, that Hashem's every level of Malchus creates a specific limitation, as it says, millions will serve before you. So, millions, okay, sounds like a lot, and it doesn't say how many millions, but there's a number there. It's a specific number of how many will serve Hashem. V'zeh cheshbon gadol. It's a lot. Shal yidei roiv ma'isa hatzdaka shalom. But that's what gets affected for every little act of charity that we do. We affect every single creature throughout the entire entire spectrum of creation.
We're on time.
Yep. Kipira shalom hu davar ha-mechaber u-metavech beis k'tzavis habchim. What does the word peace mean? You have two opposing forces, two warring factions. So what does peace do? Peace puts those two opposites put together and makes them a single unit. That this refers to the highest levels of the heavens, which to a search to his greatness you cannot search. The lower level of heaven, which is enclosed, even down in this physical world, is gavul umisper, so that it comes down in a limited way, vidal. It's a very abrupt start and it's an abrupt ending. It suffices for those who understand. If you haven't got it by now, that we're up to chapter 30 already, and he didn't introduce anything new already, so it's enough for those who understand. Bottom line is, we have to keep doing whatever it is that we're doing, because everything that we do is accomplishing great things that we do not see, because everything that we are doing in the service of Hashem is connecting us to the Ratzon Ha'Elyon, the supernal will of Hashem, drawing it down here, making this world a much better place, and ultimately bringing the Mashiach, we should be zeichah to it, v'meira b'yameinu mamash. And that ends chapter 31. To be continued.